and welcome to the Travel Diaries podcast. I'm your host, journalist Holly Rubenstein, and today we are heading to a sun-soaked slice of heaven, the place I chose as my all-time favourite destination when I answered my own travel diaries here on the podcast, the Golden State. It is, of course, California. I have been so excited to work on this episode for you, bringing to life a destination that's so close to my heart. So close, in fact, that I even got married on one of its many golden sand beaches. The reason I love California so much is that it's a paradise of possibilities, a promise of endless adventure that really caters to every traveler. From the dramatic coastlines of Big Sur, where the waves dance with the rugged cliffs, to the sun-kissed beaches of Santa Monica and the iconic Santa Cruz Boardwalk, this is a state that offers a buffet of coastal delights. Speaking of buffets, don't even get me started on the food. California is a culinary playground where flavors from all around the world collide. From cool food truck gems in Los Angeles to Michelin-starred eateries in San Francisco, your taste buds will embark on a journey of their own, not forgetting that it's home to some of the most famous and beautiful wine country in the world too. And how about the great outdoors? California is a nature lover's dream come true. Yosemite National Park, with its colossal granite cliffs and lush forests, will make you feel like you've stepped into a postcard. There's a historic redwood forest up in Northern California, and for the adrenaline junkies, there's Lake Tahoe, offering year-round thrills from skiing in the winter to kayaking in the summer. Whether you're chasing dreams in LA, hiking in the Sierra Nevada, or sipping on Cabernet in wine country, California is a place where every moment feels like a movie scene, and you are the star. And speaking of stars, today we are joined by a star-studded lineup of some of my favorite guests across the last 10 seasons who've chosen California as part of their travel diaries. They'll be taking us on the ultimate California road trip, a trip of a lifetime you can do in 2 or 3 weeks that everyone should be adding to their bucket list. And then later, we're joined by the Michelin star chef and California native, Nancy Silverton. So before we set off, for avid listeners, you might remember that on my 100th episode, my husband Alex interviewed me about my travel diaries. And of course, as I mentioned, I spoke about California. So let's start with my take on why California is an all-time fave. A trip to California can include a desert experience in Joshua Tree or in Palm Springs.
Yeah.
So full of history and heritage. Then, you know, Big Sur, the big mountains, the dramatic cliff drops looking out to the Pacific, and then moving up along Highway 1. I mean, my point being, it's such a diverse state. And then you land in LA and it's like, that is Hollywood, you know, the glamour, the excitement, the palm trees lining the streets. I adore Santa Monica and Venice, walking along the Venice canals. The fact that there are canals running through right by the beach there with the little bridges that go over
them. It's my favorite spot in LA is Santa Monica and the Venice canals.
Yeah.
It's just, that's got such an energy to it.
It's
even
so,
more so,
so
than
great.
The rest of it.
And but listen, I don't want to just stick on LA.
No, so I was going
to
ask you.
Yeah, okay, going on to Santa Barbara. Montecito.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is another place that is an all-time favorite. And I mean, California, we still haven't gone up to, you know, San Francisco wine country and beyond. So
the national parks.
Oh, of course, and the national parks, which I was going to also mention. So, I mean, I think that I could have my next 10 to 15 holidays in California alone. Oh, well, I wax lyrical about Los Angeles and that, so let's start the road trip there. So much to do and see in the City of Angels. It is a sprawling city. It's made up of many districts like Beverly Hills, downtown Culver City, and no trip to LA is complete without a trip to Hollywood itself. The Sunset Strip, Griffith Park, the Hollywood sign, the Walk of Fame, and if you want to live the life of a star whilst you're there, here is a really snazzy hotel recommendation from model and actress Poppy Delevingne in the area.
Well, there is a hotel that I sort of think of that always really reminds me of like sort of home.
Mm-hmm.
But only because I've spent so much time. It's in LA. It's called the Chateau Marmont. I'm sure all of your listeners have heard of it a million times. They've been there a million times. But it is just one of these places that when I have to go to LA for work and I feel like just feeling like I'm, I don't know, it's just homely for me. And, you know, I know everyone that works there.
Is it because you know everyone? Yeah.
I think I feel like I know everyone that works there. I know that area. I know that part of Hollywood really well.
Which part of Hollywood is it in?
Well, so it's kind of, you know, it's just off Sunset and the Sunset Strip. And I feel like I've just known that area for a really long time. And I love Andre Balazs, who owns it. And he's a really dear friend. And yeah, when I just go there, it's like, I just feel like I'm coming home.
Mm.
And that for me, I don't know, I always think that's a very good sign of a very good hotel.
No trip to LA is complete without going to the beach. And the most iconic is down in Santa Monica. The famous pier is where Route 66 ends, and the area is just full of amazing restaurants, bars, and hotels. Neighboring Venice Beach, Venice Canals has its own gems. I'd really recommend a lazy afternoon wandering the Venice Canals. Definitely worth spending a night or two in this area. And with that in mind, let's hear from newsreader Sir Trevor McDonald, who shares his love for the area and a great hotel recommendation that I can fully endorse.
When I wasn't working, I discovered a place outside Los Angeles, Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered a hotel there which gave on to the beach, and where all the sort of vague idiosyncrasies of American life, you know, you would see people running around with little dogs on the beach and, you know, women on bicycles towing the dogs behind, and the beach was lovely, and there was Muscle Beach where people... And this hotel, Shutters on the Beach, was just absolutely ideal. And you could go down to the end of the beach, and there was an Italian restaurant there where you went in, and nobody asked about what you wanted for dinner or for lunch, you know. They'd put some bread on the table and put two bottles of wine on the table. And then they would distribute song sheets, and people would start singing "When the Moon Hits the Star" or whatever the song was. You know, that's. And I thought it was all wonderful, and I love the quiet of Santa Monica, away from the noise and bustle of Los Angeles. I loved it, and I had I always got a suite which overlooked the car park, and people said to me, "But it overlooks the car park." I said, "No, but it's just lovely, and I can walk down." The restaurant was lovely, and
it embodies California lifestyle so well, doesn't it?
You
could see the Santa Monica Pier with the Ferris wheel and the palms.
That's right. The Ferris wheel was out there. Yes, on the right as I looked out. I love Santa Monica. It was the quieter, I think, more sort of dignified bit of America.
Yeah. From LA, you could decide to head inland towards Palm Springs or Joshua Tree, two amazing options, which I'll be chatting about in depth on a special bonus episode coming up on Friday. Then we stick to the coast and hit the iconic Route 1, the Pacific Coast Highway that winds itself up from LA all the way to San Francisco and beyond. Driving from LA, your first stops are Malibu, Ojai, which you'll hear about later in the episode, and Santa Barbara, which I adore. It is such a fun little city with so much to do. You have to go for a day, and if you can, you want to splash out, stay at the Rosewood. You won't regret it. As you continue north from there, the next stop is San Luis Obispo, which is renowned for its wine, but also was where Ed Gamble had one of his most unforgettable stays. So let's hear from him now.
Went on honeymoon in May.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. To California, and had an incredible trip, and just drove around, and that was fantastic.
Oh, what was your itinerary? Because that was also my honeymoon.
Great. So itinerary, fly into LA, couple of days in LA, drive to Palm Springs, few days in Palm Springs.
Lovely. Where did you stay?
At the Ace Hotel Palm Springs, which was lovely. And then drove from San Francisco back down to LA, but stopping in Big Sur and stopping in the wildest hotel I've ever stopped in my life. Mad. The Madonna Inn.
Can I guess? Was it the Madonna Inn? Yeah.
The Madonna Inn in San Luis Obispo, which was just crazy. I mean, my wife was like, oh, yeah, I definitely want to go there. I was like, I don't know what this place is. And then we checked in. I was like, I see why you want to go here.
This okay, exactly so tell us about it. I haven't been, but I've read about it.
It is. It's a crazy place. I think there's like 250 rooms. It's this massive motel, essentially, just off the freeway. And it's every single room is themed in some way. And our room was called Tall and Shorts because it was originally designed for a tall person and a short person. That wasn't evidenced in the room. It's just like mad pink carpets. And right. We were there for one night, which is what I would recommend. The restaurant is just this pink and gold monstrosity, but it's kitsch is the way to sum it up. It's like kitsch.
Yeah, super
kitsch. Super kitsch. And we had an amazing time. We arrived, we were a bit early, so we couldn't check in. So we went to the bar, which is another fantastic kitsch masterpiece, and had, I'd say, you know, three drinks, but in the States, they free pour. So we were absolutely blasted, and then went to the boutique and ended up buying loads of clothes. So that night, I was wearing a cowboy shirt with big skulls on it that had like sort of Diamante eyes or something. And my wife bought a like kaftan dress that matched the carpet in the restaurant.
Amazing.
I mean, we had an incredible time. The clientele is great because it's a mix of people who clearly go there all the time. So couples in their 60s, 70s, 80s who are like up there dancing on the dance floor and, you know, clearly go there, you know, once a year or whatever. And yeah. Then hipster couples who are like, this is so ironic.
Yes.
Like a lot of that going on. But it was an absolute ball. And we ended up, yeah, so that was, we went to stay in Santa Barbara for a night after that and then back to LA for a couple of nights and then we were home. But yeah, an amazing 3-week trip.
So it sounds so wonderful. In fact, on the Pacific Highway 1, if you're doing that road trip, San Luis Obispo, I think, is a bit of a hidden gem that people sometimes drive through, and it's actually a really cool place to stop. There's some cool restaurants and there's a cool vibe there.
Yeah, I feel like I'd like to go back and not, well, not necessarily to there, but just do that drive again and take longer over it, because I think we still did it in like 3 or 4 days and stayed in Big Sur for a couple of nights. That was amazing. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to do it from Oregon and do the whole thing, and that's the whole holiday.
Once you leave San Luis Obispo, some blitz through to Big Sur, but author and journalist John Ronson talks about his own love for Route 1, and in there he gives some great recommendations for what to do in that stretch in between.
I really love Highway 1. It's basically the coastal road that takes you, well, we started in Napa Valley and ended up in Los Angeles. It's the mm-hmm. coastal road that goes down the Pacific. It's called the Pacific Coast Highway. And yeah. It takes you through Big Sur, Monterey, Santa Barbara, where the Hearst Castle, you know, San Simeon, where William Randolph Hearst lived. Mm-hmm. There's beaches filled with sort of things that look like sea lions.
Yeah,
That would probably be my favorite place in the world, as well as my hidden gem.
Really?
Yeah, Highway 1. So on the as you're driving down, on the right you've got the Pacific Ocean, and on the left you've got these mountains that look surprisingly like the Scottish Highlands. Like people have said to me, we want to go on a road trip in America. Where would you recommend? And I always say the Pacific Coast Highway.
And what's your favorite stop?
There's a beach. Just before the pandemic hit, I was there actually on my own doing a bit of work, and I stopped to look at the seals on this beach.
If it's the same seals that I remember, is that just before Big Sur, where they all kind of bask on that stretch? A lot of people drive past,
yes,
and they're like 10 deep,
yeah,
in a line, and they look kind of like they're dead, but they're not. They're just kind of sleeping there.
Yeah. My only hesitancy is, you said just before, but it's just before if you're driving up the coast from...
Oh, yeah, sorry. I went the other way to you. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm pretty sure we're talking about the same place. Yeah,
they're amazing, aren't they? I mean, amazing wildlife to get to interact with.
Oh, my God. It's incredible. And it hasn't been, you know, the Pacific Coast Highway is one of the most beautiful stretches of landscape in the world. And yet it hasn't been built up. So I love that. And I love the destination too. I love Los Angeles. I adore it. It's so magical. I actually would put LA as one of my most magical places in the world. But when you fly to LA, it's like another planet. You know, the colors, the desert, the architecture.
Yeah.
I kind of love LA as a holiday destination.
Such an epic stretch of road. You pop out the other side first at Monterey and Carmel by the Sea, and then Santa Cruz. All worthy of a trip in their own right, in fact. And from there, you hug the coast through Half Moon Bay all the way to San Francisco. All in all, it's an 8 or 9 hour drive, but it is so worth taking your time and making those stops to take in the absolute plethora of beautiful viewpoints and variety of sights that you see on this stretch. Right, San Francisco, let's get stuck in. A city that has so much to offer. I recommend you plan ahead and stay in the right areas. If you choose the right place, it's spectacular. I would avoid staying in the Union Square area. It's very busy. Find one of the many boutique hotels the city has to offer. We stayed in Embarcadero, which is walking distance to Chinatown and all the piers, including Fisherman's Wharf. The city has some amazing parks, and I think a must-do is renting a bike and cycling over to Sausalito. You go over the iconic Golden Gate Bridge and then get the ferry back to take in the bay and see Alcatraz and the skyline of the city. I think San Francisco feels very European compared to most US cities, and it's jam-packed with culture. There are so many experiences and museums to take in, but here is Brian Chesky, the founder and CEO of Airbnb, who lives in San Francisco, with one idea that's slightly out of left field.
When I'm trying to think, when people visit me in San Francisco, where do I take them?
Mm-hmm.
I take a lot of people to the Walt Disney Family Museum. I'm not recommending everyone go to it, but I have a deep interest in Walt Disney because I thought he was a creative leader. I want to identify as one as well. He was a creative leader that was a futurist, really a technologist, people don't realize, that started a company that was beloved. But he had a vision of a whole different way to live your life in communities. You know, when he was working on Disneyland, his real vision was to design communities of the future. In fact, the name Epcot at Walt Disney World stands for Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow. It initially was not conceived as a theme park. What Walt Disney was actually trying to do before he died was to create a city of tomorrow, a community of the future. And it was going to, that's why he incorporated this town in Disney World. And that was not going to be a theme park primarily. It was going to be this future city. And it had, you know, underground tunnels, like what Elon Musk is like putting out as a vision of the Boring Company. And it had a radial airport, you know, where the runway was on a giant circle to save space. And it was just, he had the precursor to self-driving cars. They were called Wedway people machines. The whole thing was a radial design, kind of like similar to the plan of Paris. And Walt Disney, before he died, said, I don't think there's a greater challenge in the world than the challenge of today's cities. This is in 1966. I think that can be said today now more than ever before. And so it's kind of a weird thing, but when sometimes I have friends visit me in San Francisco, I'll take them to Walt Disney Museum that's in the Presidio. And I sometimes, again, it's very personal to me, but I'll take them through the museum, through Walt's life, and show them the principles of what Walt did, because it's kind of a way to understand some of what my passions are. And he's probably one of my idols.
Great. Great pick. And when I go to San Francisco next,
it was a tough one because I was like, oh my God, like what coffee shop would I take you to? What restaurant? But I feel like there's something more meaningful than that. That was it.
The city is also a foodie's paradise with the ocean on your doorstep. A lot revolves around seafood. Chinatown in San Fran has some of the best Chinese restaurants in the US, and there's a great pop-up food scene too. Let's hear it from someone who knows about food, the legendary chef Michel Roux Jr. He tells us about his foodie experiences driving the length of California, as well as sharing two iconic recommendations for places to eat in San Francisco.
One of the trips that I did also for me was a stepping stone, was a learning curve food-wise. And that was a trip I did with my wife, the whole West Coast of America. It was extraordinary. because, again, seeing different styles of food from north to south, because the food scene from north to south on that Pacific Highway is completely different. Totally different.
Totally.
And then the wine region up north as well was something else. And San Francisco was such a city. Well, it is such an amazing city to visit. And the food scene there is just like, whoa, it's incredible. I mean, I remember going to Spargo's and for the first time, and it's still there now, and being blown away by the vastness of the place. It's huge. They cater for like 300-400 people a day, and the quality is up there. And you know, I just couldn't get my head around how they managed to produce that amount of food at such quality and at such speed. And then Chez Panisse as well, and you know, so all of those wonderful places that are iconic and have stood the test of time, but then also some weird and wonderful places, you know, Santa Barbara, and it's just an extraordinary trip that food-wise, I will never forget either.
And we're not quite ready to finish the California road trip yet. There are two trips you have to bolt on to any journey from San Francisco: a wine odyssey to Napa and Sonoma, and a hiking trip to Yosemite National Park. Let's start with the wine. Napa and Sonoma are two valleys about an hour north of San Francisco that are home to some of the best wine in the US and globally. Napa is quite touristy and expensive compared to Sonoma, but they are both worth visiting and getting lost in for a few days. And so many new openings happening in that area as well. Right, let's end this trip in the great outdoors. Nothing evokes that quite like Yosemite National Park. It's a good 3-hour drive from San Francisco, so make sure that you spend a night or two there at least. There are so many sections of the park to explore, and it's best done on foot, so bring your hiking boots. My final guest today is a legendary singer, Gregory Porter, who so beautifully brings to life this wonderful spot.
Yosemite, you know, was a place that we first went. That was my first major trip. And I remember getting out and seeing the giant redwood trees, giant pines. And it was just extraordinary to think that these trees, which have grown hundreds of years, and just the great mountains, El Capitan, you know, this giant, it looks like a giant stone just placed upon its edge.
Yeah.
Coming from what then at the time was basically the hood, 36th and Normandy, the hood in LA, and going to Yosemite was just an extraordinarily beautiful, extraordinarily natural, awe-inspiring, heavenly. Because once you get into the trees and underneath the canopy of all the trees, it's surreal. It's surreal.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine as a grown man, well, I've been there since I've been a grown man, and it still makes me feel tiny. But as a child, my older brothers were already, you know, at 13 and 14, they were already 6'4", and they seemed like giants. And I just remember feeling my brothers were giants and they looked tiny in this forest. And then I was at their knee. So I was beyond small, you know.
Yeah. Awe-inspiring destination.
Yeah. Awe-inspiring destination. And the nature, I think that may have been the first time I'd seen wild animals, deer, just, you know, leaping across the road. And yeah, and the family thing that happens, being in the car. These are the things that are precious to me now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. so they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Today's episode is supported by Airbnb. And what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb. Well, that brings to an end an epic California road trip. As I said, leave at least 2 weeks to do it justice, in my view. It will be worth it, really the trip of a lifetime. I've missed out so many other California wonders. Northern California, which has so much to offer, as does the South around San Diego. Oh, it's stunning down there. The Redwoods in Sequoia, so special, and the areas around Lake Tahoe too. But that was my California 101 road trip. And if that wasn't enough for you, we're now joined by Chef Nancy Silverton, California born and bred with a career spanning decades. Nancy has earned her place among the elite in the culinary realm. You might have seen her recently on Chef's Table's pastry season. She is a revered chef and restaurateur known for her dedication to fresh, seasonal ingredients. Her iconic Los Angeles eateries, including Osteria Mozza and Pizzeria Mozza, have become landmarks for food enthusiasts seeking exquisite Italian cuisine. Her culinary prowess has earned her numerous awards, including the prestigious James Beard Foundation's Outstanding Chef accolade. She's a prolific author, sharing her expertise through cookbooks that inspire home cooks to elevate their culinary skills, and her legacy is sure to endure for generations to come. Today, she shares with us her Californian travel diaries, her all-time favorites and hidden gems as someone who knows the state so well. Chef Nancy Silverton, welcome to the Travel Diaries and to this California destination special. It's so great to be chatting with you today. How are you?
I'm great. You know, I'm just back from a trip to France. So I'm feeling, have you ever been to Marseille?
I haven't actually. No, nearby, but yeah.
That's where you need to go eat.
And then returning back to your home in California then, you know, what does it make you appreciate when you've been away, when you come back home?
Well, you know, I have to say, and if you don't mind me keep referring to Marseille, I think Marseille was probably one of the most diverse communities I've ever been in, and with the most, and reflected in their food. And what I think as far as the, say, American food scene, I think Los Angeles is as close as you get to that.
Interesting, right.
You know, and Los Angeles has always been that way, you know. I don't know how much, have you been to Los Angeles before?
Yes, a few times.
Because there was a period in my restaurant career, and I would say probably, I think throughout the 90s, that as far as a foodie destination, and when I say foodie, I mean sort of my fellow chefs around the country that would sort of go to different cities to get inspiration. LA, for some reason, was off the list. And it was off the list because LA didn't really compare to, say, the more formal, but kind of that higher end spectrum, right? But what Los Angeles always had was that sort of smaller immigrant restaurant. And all of a sudden, I've noticed in the last, say, certainly 5 years, but maybe a little bit more, those tables have turned. And I just see the amount of people coming to Los Angeles for inspiration, more so than anywhere else, more so than San Francisco, more so than New York, you know. So that's noticeable to me, which is great because that's the city I'm from.
Yeah. Well, and maybe you could say the first person to put LA as a culinary destination on the map was Wolfgang Puck. I know that.
Yes.
That you used to work together. He was a guest on my podcast a couple of seasons ago, one of my favorite episodes, actually. And he elevated the cuisine there, didn't he?
He certainly did. And you know, that's where I started.
Yeah, that's why I mentioned it.
Okay, so yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, because I was the opening pastry chef there. So yes, when, you know, before Wolfgang, there was a handful of restaurants that were kind of celebrity restaurants, you know, Los Angeles being where it is, right? And we all know what Hollywood is all about. It did have a handful of celebrity restaurants that, I mean, industry restaurants, I'll call it, that weren't anywhere else in the country. So they were restaurants such as Perino's and Chasen's. And these were sort of restaurants where the Hollywood industry would hang out. And then things kind of, you know, sort of quieted down. And then with Wolfgang, yes, absolutely. He put Los Angeles back on the culinary map. But then after the splash of Spago, and for various other reasons in Los Angeles, it kind of petered out. Yes, there was Spago, but there was nothing else. Nothing else brought people to LA.
Interesting. And so now, what are some of the new restaurant openings that you're kind of referring to? What are the ones that are making you excited? Are there any particular spots that for my listeners to be heading to LA that they should definitely check out?
People are not as ambitious as they were, say, in the early 80s. I mean, in New York, for instance, huge restaurants were opened up with grand dining rooms. Now they're very small, very modest, and tiny kitchens. And I love like there's a restaurant now that's very popular in the San Fernando Valley, which is a neighborhood in Los Angeles, called Anna Jack Thai, for instance. Tiny, tiny restaurant. Very modest, I think it's a second generation, unless it's longer generation than second. But I know it was a young chef that took over a family, very traditional Thai little bistro and turned it into kind of a hipster joint, right? Mm-hmm. And it's super popular. There's these multi unit. Yes, thank you. A little plaza, right? Yeah. And that's another place that people are opening up, kooky little places. And there was one that was called Cato in Los Angeles that opened up a few years ago, pre-2020, certainly. And it ended up being like the number one restaurant, I think, in LA. And it was shocked people. This is according to the LA Times, by the way. And it shocked people because it was so modest. And why would that be the best restaurant in LA? Now, since then, he's moved downtown, which is a very thriving restaurant community now, our downtown Los Angeles, which was dead for so many years. And he sort of upped his game with the tasting menu, and it's a lot more expensive.
Right.
But that's a restaurant called Cato. There's a restaurant that's just come back that was sort of well received and then closed and now just reopened in, again, a little bit more of a upscale version, but still not high end, called Baru, which was one of the first restaurants that kind of embraced the art of fermentation and grains and things like that. And that's very popular right now.
I love these recommendations, you know, because of course there's a time and a place for fine dining and fancy food. But when you're traveling, often you just want to get a really great bite to eat that's exciting, innovative, but not necessarily, you know, not necessarily white tablecloth. So these are really great recommendations because, as you say, they're kind of more low key in their vibe.
Another thing that Los Angeles really was known for, it wasn't the birth of, but it became very popular, is all the food trucks And so that's a big component to the way people eat, as well as, and I think this came along in many cities that because I've heard many restaurants that got started this way, that during the pandemic, sort of backyard pop-up places that people started and were, you know, serving food or offering food that people could either stop by outside or order online, and that became restaurants. And so I'm reading about those all the time, and I can't keep track of where they are, but it always starts out with started in the backyard in 2020. When as soon as you say 2020, we all know what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
And then it's developed, you know, and from there, they've got a bricks and mortar. So those are popular restaurants that have opened. And like, again, I cannot keep track of.
It's encouraging in a way that out of something that was so bad has come, you know, creative thinking and a new, you know, source of inspiration for food, really.
Yeah. And we always have to find that silver lining, right? And that was the silver lining. But I think this trend of modest restaurants that are opening probably worldwide is a great trend.
And within the state, do you get out of LA a lot?
You know, where I go the most, so north of LA is, which is sort of called the Central Valley, I guess, is a pocket that is very, very interesting. And it's become popular in the last handful of years because the wines of that area have now become very popular. For a while, it was you have to go to Napa or Sonoma to drink the wines that people want to drink. And now people are kind of finding and discovering this pocket in Central California. And it's a beautiful, beautiful agricultural area as well. Actually, it's probably the largest agricultural area in the United States as far as it's growing,
really?
You know,
really,
especially with its nuts and its raisins, huge farms. But I do a lot of collaborative work with a little resort in around that area in a town called Ojai. So I go a lot to Ojai, California, to the Ojai Valley Inn. And sometimes when I'm done there, I'll take little side trips and drive around some of these little towns like Solvang and Los Olivos. Beautiful, beautiful little towns with great up-and-coming restaurants and farmers markets and things like that. But the
Very
Central
wholesome.
Valley, I mean, that's the all of California. I mean, of all of the country, I think that is the largest agricultural belt, you know, anywhere. And it just goes on forever. Strawberries, artichokes, garlic, I mean, lettuces, on and on and on and on.
It's so beautiful there. And how long would it take you to get there if you were staying, say, if you were doing a holiday in LA and you wanted to do an excursion there?
Oh, well, you can go as far as you want, but from Los Angeles to Ojai is maybe only an hour and 15 minutes.
So it's really doable.
You know, an hour away in any direction will take you to the mountains and you can go skiing, let's say an hour and a half. But the desert, you can go to Palm Desert or Palm Springs, you know, or out that way. You can go to Yosemite. I mean, it's just like nowhere else. Big Sur, now I'm talking longer. I'm talking now I'm into 4 and 5 hours away. But still,
the diversity of the landscape.
It isn't anywhere else.
It's so special in that way. And today, Chef Nancy, we are going to be uncovering your Californian travel diaries as someone who loves the state so much. So now we're going to take a little format of chapters, and we start with chapter one. And that is the first place that you fell in love with in California.
Okay, growing up, when families didn't travel the way that they travel now. But what my parents did like to do is they used to love to kind of pick out pockets around Los Angeles. So two places that I remember so clearly, my mother being so enthusiastic about. One was the Watts Towers. Mm-hmm. And that's in a very sort of difficult area in Los Angeles, Watts community, There's a lot of housing projects and things like that. But in the center of that community were these beautiful towers, kind of Gaudi-esque.
That
are stunning. And there they are in a community that doesn't necessarily have a great rap, right? And so I went there several times with my mother because she was just infatuated by those towers. And then another little place that I remember was Olvera Street, which was, I think, the first street in Los Angeles. And I loved it because besides eating on that street where you could get, you know, the typical Mexican food as we know it, but there was all these shops that did crafts there, such as candle making and glass blowing. And I would always mm-hmm. like to buy, you know, little teeny figurines and things like that.
Yeah.
But walking on that street in Olvera Street was, you really didn't think you were in Los Angeles. So
totally
those,
as
a childhood, are two things that stand out immediately, Olvera Street and Watts Towers.
And is Olvera Street still the same feel now?
It really is. It really is. I mean, I don't go to it as an adult. I find better Mexican food in different places, right? But at that time, there weren't ones that I knew of. I mean, they always existed, but I didn't know of them.
Mm. And would you travel within the state, you know, to some of the other, like to the national parks and to some of those other areas?
Or did that come later? My father was a huge fan of Yosemite, and that was where we would take trips camping. So mm-hmm. Yosemite National Park. And then the other place that we would go quite often, my father was an attorney and one of his clients had a hotel in Palm Springs. Now, Palm Springs is a very developed area now, unrecognizable to the Palm Springs of my childhood, which was one block long, maybe two blocks long, one street. But I loved to go there because, you know, the weather was warm, there was a pool, and I always found that the terrain of a desert was just spectacular with those cactus.
Yeah, with the big San Jacinto Mountains the towering palms. It's so striking and so photogenic and an inspiring landscape, isn't it?
Yep. And then we used to go to San Francisco a lot because my mother's sister lived there. So we used to go to Berkeley. Is where she lived. And it was always very intimidating to me. You know, that was the first time I remember hearing the word beatnik and then later on hippies. But I was very frightened by that term. But we used to go to Berkeley a lot. But these were, again, modifications where most families were the way that they traveled in those days. Was it within the state? You know, people didn't, it wasn't like it is now, at least.
But I mean, so many of my guests' childhood travel memories are within the kind of greater local vicinity. And
yeah.
I mean, how lucky that, as we've been talking about already, that within your greater local vicinity, there's such an incredible diversity of options.
Yeah.
That you could have a beach holiday or a mountain holiday or a skiing holiday or a desert holiday.
And, you know, now that I'm thinking even more, I was telling you that my two big memories were Olvera Street and Watts Tower. Another one was Capistrano, which I haven't thought about in years, which is down towards San Diego.
Uh-huh.
And that was where the swallows would return at some point every year. And we went down a few times with my family to see the swallows as they returned to
Wow, that must have been beautiful.
To Capistrano.
Love that. And how about then chapter two? Because this is the hard one, your all-time favorites. How you maximize the ultimate playground that is California. Normally, I just ask for an all-time favorite destination, but because we're kind of deep diving, I was thinking maybe you could tell me your favorite restaurant, if you would be so kind as to share your favorite hotel. And maybe like your favorite destination within the state.
Wow, that's really hard. In the state of California, my favorite restaurant, because it's really the way, not only the way that I like to eat, but it's also was sort of the restaurant that set me on my path, which I've never diverted from, and that would be Chez Panisse. I still think that it's an institution. It's been around more than 40 years. I don't know what anniversary it's going to be celebrating, but it's been around forever. But it's still, through all those years, has stayed true to its beginnings. It's in Berkeley, and it was started by Alice Waters, who I still feel is the most influential American cook for me. And it is all the buzzwords that we all know today: local, seasonal, not manipulated,
whole foods,
with care, healthy, you know, anything you want me to say. Yeah. All the words that we want to use and eat.
Is there a dish in particular that you think about there?
You know, that one of the dishes that they put on the menu that's probably still on the menu was a simple mezcalin salad, a sort of a mix of tender leaves, perfectly dressed, perfectly seasoned with a California goat's cheese that was breaded and sort of fried on the side. The ultimate simple combination with wonderful temperatures and flavors and textures. How about that? Because the menu changes, you know, all the time, but that's something that's always been on the menu.
And how about a favorite hotel?
I've never really stayed, let's say, in a hotel in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I tend to like more modest ones. I don't like big, flashy, you know, although I do love the Ojai Valley Inn. Mm. That's a wonderful resort. Let me say the Ojai Valley Inn because they're beautiful grounds.
Beautiful.
And it's, you know, for me, a large hotel where I get into an elevator and I press the 27th floor is just not my idea of a hotel. These are small bungalows on a beautifully kept resort, with gorgeous weather, beautiful mountains aside, and then walking distance to a very sweet town, which is Ojai. So how about if I say my favorite hotel in California is the Ojai Valley Inn?
That's a really good pick. And I think that if you're a fan of that kind of hotel, California actually really caters to that. There are lots of more boutique, you could say, properties. Yeah. Certainly in Palm Springs, a lot of them are very small in vibe. And then it when you're describing the Ojai Valley Inn, I've not stayed there, but it made me think.
You need to.
I would love to. But it made me think of San Isidro Ranch.
Yes, that's another great place. And you know, that's the sort of Santa Barbara area, which is right near Ojai. And there's lovely ones there as well. And San Isidro Ranch is one of them. Uh-huh.
Mm, that kind of luxe but low-key combination.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's not cheap, right? Mm. But you feel like it is kind of rustic and you feel comfortable there.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when I go in these super elegant places, I just feel so out of place.
Well, I don't know why you would feel that way. I mean, but having said that, you know, what your restaurant embodies is a vibe that is, you know, excellent, unbelievable food, but it's not stuffy. You have a welcoming culture, and that's what you're about.
Yeah.
And away from the food scene in California, how do you like to have fun and how do you like to unwind?
You know, I think that because of my travel schedule now, I would say to have fun is going back to my restaurants and, you know,
really?
Reconnecting. And
that's so nice.
And, you know, because that's not work for me. You know, when I travel to my home in Italy, for instance, and I do a lot of cooking when I'm there, and people always are surprised, why are you cooking so much? Don't you want to relax? You're on vacation. And that's my vacation, is actually being able to cook. And that's my way of unwinding here, is kind of reconnecting, because it's not only important for myself and it's important for our customers, but certainly important to the staff, because so many of them are there to work with me, right? They're not at a faceless, nameless restaurant. And so I need to be there to supplement that.
Yeah, and guide them.
Yes.
So chapter three, Chef Nancy, is your Californian hidden gem.
If I had to say a hidden gem, every time I think of one, I'll think of another. I mean, one of the places I used to love to go to so much was going to the ferry building at the San Francisco, the Embarcadero. And I loved the ferry plaza because there were so many great restaurants there. And I used to love a restaurant called Bouvet. Mm-hmm. And they did a fantastic job. Two women. I love that little restaurant. I love the coffee at Blue Bottle. I love the little stores in there. Sometimes it's great to have everything up under one roof. And that was one of my definite destinations when I would go to San Francisco, is that Embarcadero, the ferry plaza. And I love the farmer's market there. The farmer's market in San Francisco is a fantastic farmer's market.
Great tips. I love those. And finally, then, chapter four, that is the destination that is at the top of your travel bucket list in California.
I think that the restaurant that I would really like to try is at the Boonville Hotel. It was, and that's in Mendocino County. So that's north of Napa by several miles. And there's no work that takes me up there. See, I travel so much for work doing dinners in various restaurants that I get to see so much. And that's where I go. But nothing, my travels in California have not brought me that far north for a number of years. And I've heard such great things about that restaurant. So let me put that on my bucket list, the Boonville Hotel.
Wonderful. Oh, well, thank you so much, Chef Nancy Silverton. Those were your Californian travel diaries. Thank you for making us feel so inspired. A huge thank you to Chef Nancy for joining me on the podcast and bringing to life her California favorites. I hope that this episode has inspired you to visit the Golden State and take in all it has to offer. If you want to find out more about California, always support your favorite travel magazines in print and online, and head to the Tourist Board website, visitcalifornia.com, for loads more information. I'll be back on Friday with a bonus episode all about Greater Palm Springs. In the meantime, take care, everyone, and safe travels. Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.